come in and stopping by Woods kind of go together. And I ask you to kind of think about them together. Not in that they were written together or that they were written in response one to another, but that they point up some interesting parallels, some differences and some similarities. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Let me clear that up right away. The whole in Come In. The last stanza reads, but no, comma, I was out for stars. But no, comma, I was out for stars. I would not come in. Everybody got that? But no, comma, I was out for stars. I would not come in. I meant not even if asked, and I hadn't been. Okay. Let's turn to those two poems, because it seems to me is good to come to them fresh from yesterday, because we had a little practice yesterday in dealing with a lyric poem which was about something whose major structural feature was a kind of narrative, or actually two narratives yesterday. And it might look as though, and it might indeed be the case, that one or both of these are narratives. Let me turn first to the Come In poem, since I think Stopping by Woods is already very familiar, and read it out loud so that we all have read it at least once through before we try to talk about it. And then, as I'm reading it, you might think, because I'm going to ask the same kinds of questions I did yesterday, well, what is this really about, number one? And number two, how is it organized? What accounts for its movement from one stanza to another? Is it to a story? Is it going to be a series of pictures that are superimposed one on another? Is it going to be, well, any number of things that might account for the various parts and the way they relate to one another?
As I came to the edge of the woods, fresh music, hark. Now, if it was just outside, inside, it was dark. Too dark in the woods for a bird by sleight of wing to better its perch for the night, though it still could sing. The last of the light of the sun that had died in the west still lived for one song more in the thrush's breast. Far in the pillar dark, thrush music went, almost like a call to come in to the dark and lament. But no, I was out for stars. I would not come in. I meant not even if asked, and I hadn't been.
Okay, thank you, Oren. Those of you who came in late, Come In is the poem that we just read, and the, that's odd, those of you who came in and that were reading Come In. The last verse there, the whole there, the is, but no, comma, I was out for stars. I would not come in, okay? Okay, so what is, it may refer to trees, but the choice of the word there, pillared, is going to be a clue to getting at. It's that kind of attention to detailed word choice that helps get at the particular tone of the poem and the particular connotations maybe dark is supposed to have. But rather than to try to deal with all these things at once, namely what dark might represent and so on, let's try just to get the basic structure of the poem clear first, and then the details will take on some meaning and we'll have a reason to attend to them. Let's get back to the notion of contrast. Is this poem really about a contrast between dark and stars or some such thing? Is it organized so that we get one or two stanzas about part one of a contrast and then one or two stanzas about part two of the contrast? Is that the kind of way the poem's organized?
In a clear on the dark.
Yeah, and just you get the impression that he's outside. Because he says, now if it was dusk outside, he was sort dusty outside, it was dark inside. So that's one contrast of being inside and outside. The other one is, I would not come in. You know, there's obviously an outside and inside.
It also has a feeling that he's on the outside looking in. The observations that are on the outside, he's actually, the feeling is that he is feeling those and seeing them, but he hears the thrush inside. I'm not coming in, I'm standing on the outside. And that fourth stanza being put where it is, it's dark in the middle of the two ones that seem to disperse the light rather than a contrast.
Okay, everybody, when they talk about the, when they speak to the issue of the contrast, always includes a he here, or a speaker. Now, how does this speaker figure into this contrast? Is he one of the things that's being contrasted, or is he being contrasted to something else? How does our description of the poem as a contrast accommodate this speaker? Where does he belong?
He's outside the contrast, isn't he?
Well, I'm asking, what do you think?
The first person who's speaking,
and
sure.
He's kind of separated from, he's looking at these things, and he's, in a sense, choosing between...
He has a choice to go on his own contrast.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the almost innocent bystander looking at these two contrasts, seems to me. Because he's in one contrast, but yet he's not invited, but he hears the other one. He's not really part of it. He's, you know, involved in that.
I think he's immersed in it.
In some sense, but that all of this, it seems to me, is redirecting the weight of the poem from the contrast to the speaker, and the speaker's either sense of it, reaction to it. Somebody mentioned choice again, which was a word that came up yesterday. We thought the road not taken was about a choice. That is, we're moving from a kind of, to say the poem is about a contrast, okay, leads us to think that it might be a kind of static, here's a kind of picture, and now here's a kind of picture, and we're done, okay? The trouble with calling it a contrast poem is that it doesn't make allowance for what everybody talks about right away, which is the speaker. And as soon as you put a speaker in the poem, who either is making a choice or is caught between the two contrasting alternatives, or prefers one to the other, or prefers one and then the other, or however you want to put it, you're into a kind of dramatic action, right? You're into a person who is, in some sense, caught between, or who notices, or who is himself the vehicle of the contrast. Okay, so the poem then tends to, the way we've been talking about it, shift our way to getting at this speaker and his or her sensibility and experience. Perhaps it's again a narrative experience, or perhaps it's simply a sort of static impression. But at any rate, that's what the poem somehow is more about. It's more about a speaker's, and then you can fill in the blank. So let's shift the gravity over to the speaker and try to reformulate what the poem's about. So someone try to tell me the poem is about the speaker's... Finish that out. We'll try something like that, see if that gets us further into it.
Dilemma is the word that comes to mind.
More of a feeling of being pulled and not wanting to go. Mm-hmm. You know, having a longing and yet not really questing satisfaction for that longing. You know, the mystery, a pull to that mystery.
And then the speaker makes a decision at the end.
Okay.
But he's not invited to say anything.
And
even
if he
has
that pull,
he doesn't want to go. The mystery, perhaps.
You feel he resists the pull?
I feel he resists the pull.
I would take that line 15, but no, I was out for Stark.
And then I think that's where he starts his decision.
No, that's kind of positive to me. You got a colon there, haven't you?
Okay, well now it seems to me we're coming around to a formulation which is going to force us to look and to test out the poem in a very close way, because now we've all kind of agreed. You said dilemma. You said pulled in one direction. You said, well, then he finally makes a decision at the end. Okay, so we have a kind of movement, which is a dramatic movement, which involves tension or dilemmas, which seems to be ended by a resolve, a resolution. Okay, now since people talk about contraries, first word today was contrast. We've got a person caught in some kind of problem. Okay, being pulled in what? Perhaps opposite directions. Perhaps directions which are different, though not opposite. Whatever. So we have to now isolate what is the problem. What are the two items of the contraries or the dilemma? And we have to ask ourselves whether, when we get to the fifth stanza and there seems to be a choice announced, a decision made, okay, or a refusal, whatever you want to call it, whether or not the poem has been building toward that, or whether the poem has been, that is the speaker's sense, being pulled all the way in the opposite direction and then suddenly snapped out of it, or whether the speaker has been pulled back and forth, and then suddenly relieves the tension the poem has created by deciding one way or another. In other words, we have to look at the actual way the drama, or if you prefer, psychodrama, how is this person going to decide? What direction is going to finally win out over the other? How is it going to work? And the only way we can do that is to follow the poem through, watch how the speaker talks about the situation he or she is confronting, and see what happens. So let's turn to that, okay? I'll just read the first four stanzas before we get to the major but no, which is a very strong break, okay? Like our poem yesterday, it was a major break in the beginning of the last stanza. But let's read the first four and think to yourselves this time as we read them, what is the speaker thinking? What kind of tone, attitude toward what the speaker describes is he showing? What kinds of directions is he being pulled in? What's the nature of the dilemma? I'll read it over. As I came to the edge of the woods, thrush music, hark. Now if it was dusk outside, inside it was dark. Too dark in the woods for a bird by sleight of wing to better its perch for the night, though it still could sing. The last of the light of the sun that had died in the west still lived for one song more in a thrush's breast. Far in the pillared dark, thrush music went, almost like a call to come into the dark and lament.
And then again he says it's almost like a call to come into the dark and lament. It's not a call to come in, but it's almost.
Okay, that at least the tentativeness of it's almost like suggests that there's still some uncertainty. But your point about lamentation is composed to, you take the stars to be a more expansive or joyous thing. That seems to make the choice between going in and staying out, as though going in is to opt for sorrow. So it's basically, and staying out is to opt for joy, as you put it. So you think that the nature of the problem is emotional. It's a kind of being caught between two feelings. And I guess you would say that you think that the options are complicated by virtue of the fact that the darkness contains this bird.
Yeah.
And you think that the bird is not at one with the darkness, but is somehow contrary to the, or not contrary, different from it. Okay, other thoughts on this matter of the nature of the dilemma?
Seems it is a very threatening experience he's having. And the thrush's voice is almost a siren voice, calling him into disaster.
Okay, this
where I put it. And that word lament is the key to me.
Okay, but this is to make it a kind of fear, terror.
Yeah.
And you say the siren song to be seduced into something that's very dangerous, very...
And he says, although it's dusk out here, boy, inside, that's coal black. With one glimmer of hope in there, perhaps.
All right, well, let's look and see if this works. we in the first line of the poem, as I came to the edge of the woods. Are we supposed to make by that that if we didn't read the rest of the poem, as I came to the edge of the woods, that the speaker was on his way into the woods?
Oh, he could be riding his horse, I feel. Just around it.
Okay, so you say that we can't tell by reading the first line whether the speaker was on his way into the woods or simply happened upon the edge of it, or...
Right.
Yeah. Okay. As I came to the edge of the woods, thrush music, hark. Do you find anything odd about the way that's put? As I came to the edge of the woods, thrush music, hark.
He's questioning it, but the thrush is still singing.
Or it's me.
Yeah, he's surprised that it's singing.
Okay, there's a surprise quality at the exclamation point. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just thinking of the word hark. It's kind of stop here, you know. I'm moving, hark. Yeah, really explain it, that's just what it gets. So, sort of almost a joke. Thrush music, hark, you know. It's a play or something. There's something sort of light about that.
A play?
Well, a play on words or a feeling. The word hark, thrush music, hark. Dramatic or something.
All right, hark is a kind of an odd word. It's not the kind of thing that we are likely to share with one another. It's a special kind of diction. And for you, that word hark...
Like a gesture.
Comes from the theater?
Shakespeare or something like that. Old English.
What other realms of diction might there be from which the word hark finds a natural place? Theater's one.
Hark the angels.
All right, hark the herald angels sing. It has a religious diction.
Yeah.
It's part of a religious diction, could be. Theater is another. Anybody else have, or is that pretty well? There's a sudden insertion of surprise with a word that is foreign to the simple, straightforward, as I came to the edge of the woods, thrush music, hark. Although even music prepares us a bit for the hark because it's not thrush song, or it's music. Thrush music, hark, and you thought of Hark the Herald Angels Sing, a kind of piece of music. So we kind of are pulled from straightforward, as I came to the edge of the woods, and a kind of title, come in, which is a very kind of thing you'd say to your, open the door, oh, come on in. It's a very kind of ordinary diction to suddenly thrush music, hark. So, yes.
It's like a dance step almost. You've got a straight movement and all of a sudden thrush music, hark, and you're just kind of going back and forth or something, with a skip or something.
Okay.
Could it imply another person in the poem too?
Listening
to the speaker saying, if you say hark, it would seem like you'd be speaking to someone else.
Okay. That's possible. That's certainly possible.
It sort of involves you as a person. You know, sort of, all of a sudden you're involved because he says listen to that thrush.
Usually means listen, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hark, hark, the lark, the heavenly day.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Frequently we'll say that, you know, with an imperative tone.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to surprise the citation.
Okay. Is that level of tension? So we've noticed within the first two lines a kind of movement from a straightforward storytelling tone, as I came to the edge of the woods, then suddenly thrush music, hark, a kind of intensity. Perhaps surprise, perhaps warning someone else, but something that's ceremonious in some sense, either from the theater or from religious, but there's something more formalized and ceremonious about the music hark than there is about the straightforward diction of the first two. So there's a kind of growing seriousness, either in terms of the warning, hark, or the surprise, or the tone of the words. Now, if it was dusk outside, inside it was dark. What do those two lines suggest after the first two? And do you find anything odd about the way they're put?
Well, you get a very ominous feeling about it, because dark always seems to signify evil or, you know, something terrible or threatening.
Okay. So you think the somber, serious tone is increased now?
Somehow it reminds me of, like, going back to fairy tales. Snow White and the dwarfs, when she's making her trail through these woods, where outside it might have been light, but the woods are so high that no light can get in, and it's evil. So that's what struck me.
Okay. Notice we don't know from the first stanza where the thrush is. I mean, as I came to the edge of where the thrush music hark, I mean, we don't know whether the thrush music is coming from inside the woods or from just somewhere. And it simply took place somewhere as he got to the edge of the woods. We don't know. But the next thing he does is to make the first explicit contrast to the poem. Remember, we talked about contrast, and it is, now if it was dusk outside, inside it was dark.
Like a curtain being dropped.
Okay.
Walking into a...
Sure. Paris the way, too, for some of the contrast later. And if you're out hiking or backpacking, you want to try to get your camp set up an hour before it gets dark, because it's just more difficult to do. But here he is walking, and because if it's dusk here, when I get in there, it's really going to be dark. And yet there's this voice calling him. And, you know, later on, you get to hear the voice calling him in there. So he's setting the stage, so he doesn't want to go in because it's dangerous, and yet he hears his voice apparently himself.
Soon the thrush will quit singing.
And when you're in the woods and it's dark, there is a covered feeling. I mean, it isn't like dark in the open.
Mm-hmm.
It surrounds you, so to speak.
Okay. Okay, so all those things, it seems to me, set up an immediate tension through contrast. All of the connotations with dark, what might happen on a kind of literal, straightforward basis if one should go in. And we're invited to resonate to those because we're right away thrust into an edge of something in the first line. And then, as you put it, the feeling of a curtain dropping, there's something on the one side that's not on the other, dusk, dark, okay? And we've been kind of brought up short with a jolt, hark. Okay, so we've already been drawn into a situation which is somewhat tense, okay, and shown contrasts that are fairly strong. And then, just as we have the outside-inside juxtaposed as two words, now if it was dark outside-inside, it was dark. We continue, we say it was dark, and then the next thing begins, too dark in the woods for a bird by sleight of wing to better its perch for the night, though it still could sing. What do you make of the fact that the person, the speaker, suddenly says thrush music hark, then shifts to the outside-inside contrast, and now starts to worry about the darkness and its relationship, not to him, but apparently to the bird?
The bird caught. Like a caged bird, it's caught, it can't move, and yet it still remembers the light and the feeling it has in the light. It doesn't come onto that whole next bit.
The next,
the danger of having to move.
Okay, let's just stick with the second one.
Yeah.
And your notion of it's being captured, since it can't seem to even adjust its position, much less get out of there.
Right.
But what do you make of the fact that the speaker's care, attention, interest, all shifts to the relationship between the bird and the dog? What do you think is going on there in the speaker's consciousness?
That it could be him. Sort of that if he was in there, he'd be in the same sort of situation.
Okay, so you think that his worry about the bird, or his discussion about the bird and the bird's state in there, is a way of talking about, if not himself, a side of himself. He's projecting onto the bird in its plight what his plight would be were he in there. That's what you think. Do others find that makes sense? Or
I get a feeling like it's somebody or something that he cares about and feels for. This person's caught in some kind of a dilemma. And yet, despite this dilemma, can still sing. Perhaps another way of looking at it.
Okay. Okay, but that's the care about the bird as a separate, discrete.
Yeah, not himself.
Character, rather than a way of worrying over himself.
Mm-hmm.
Which also may be the case. In
after that one.
We've been total darkness.
Total darkness.
Only the thrush, in other words, the thrush is signifying that it was singing to its own.
Maybe it's Frost's last poem. That's right.
It was written comparatively late in his career, but it wasn't his last.
He might be thinking about laying on his pen.
Okay. It seems as though whatever one wants to say about the thrush, and whether it's a projection of the speaker or not, and whether the speaker is Frost or not, which is a whole separate issue, there at least tends to be a movement toward a kind of steadily more foreboding circumstance. The one song more seems to me to capture something. And after that's over, what then? Your sense of entrapment, of the bird being kind of trapped in there burying the last life of the day, because we're told the last light of the sun had already died in the west. It still lived for one song more in a thrush's breast. The last light of the sun had already died in the west. It still lived for one song more in a thrush's breast. But it seems as though the only thing separating this woods from a kind of total entrapment and total lifelessness, because it still lived in a thrush's breast, scene of the heart. Okay, the song lived there. And the light died. So we've got, don't we, a choice suddenly: words, life, and death here, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. The woods might represent like a death, or it could even almost go to something really far out and think that it was thinking contemplating suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But where he says, you know, he's asking me to come in, almost a call to come in, but it looked, well, it was dangerous, but he says to that question, but no, I still want to keep living.
Okay, it seems whether we're going to buy that whole reading yet is, I think, open to question. It might turn out we think that's what the poem's saying, but it certainly we are invited into, right, fine, certainly we're invited to a, we're invited to think along those lines at this point in the stanza, just because of the life and death choice of words. It may now be that the dark, to go into the dark is to opt for a kind of death. So the speaker now is the dilemma, to get back to our sense of what's the problem, what's the dilemma, what's at stake, what's the nature of the tension, is a choice between life and death rather than, or perhaps in addition to, joy and sorrow or other things. But it's important just to pause and stress again the choice of words. It may now be that the dark, to go into the dark is to opt for a kind of death. So the speaker now is the dilemma, to get back to our sense of what's the problem, what's the dilemma, what's at stake, what's the nature of the tension, is a choice between life and death rather than, or perhaps in addition to, joy and sorrow or other things. But it's important just to pause and stress again that the way we determine these things is by just looking at exactly what words are introduced. Because this poet is writing a very short poem when he says, the last of the light of the sun that had died in the west still lived for one song more in a thrush's breast, has now given us warrant for talking about life and death. Okay? It's not as though we've brought this into the poem and then it pressed it upon the lyric. It's there. So, the tension has grown, the stakes have been either deepened or clarified. What was implicit in the first stanza has become somewhat explicit in the third. The thrush being the last bearer of what life the woods has, but it's only one song. Now what happens in the next one? Because the next one's going to be crucial, because it's going to be the one immediately preceding the but no. Far in the pillar dark, thrush music went, almost like a call to come in to the dark and lament. Let's turn to your observation earlier about how pillared was an important word. Far in the pillared dark. Now, it was brought out that pillared simply could refer to the trees. I'm sure that that's kind of the trees are the pillars. Mm-hmm. But what does the choice of the word pillared, just like we found out hark comes from a diction that's religious or theatrical and ceremonious and more formal than the casual first line. Where does pillar?
Church or a temple of some sort.
Yeah. Or in the Greek. It's
dark stillness too.
Well, the dark part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a feeling of power.
All right, it seems to be a great weight. You say associate pillar with something that's bearing a great weight. And your point about the church, or at least some edifice that not only bears a lot of physical weight, but that is concerned with grave issues. And I mean a kind of pun on grave here. It's serious, but, you know, grave issues ties into the whole business about life and death. So there's something very solemn, great, enormous solemnity far in the pillar dark. We're now at the peak of solemnity. Thrush music went. And given the preceding three stanzas and what's at stake in music, and the music went.
Left is the feeling I get. It's gone. I can just feel it hanging. You know, it's no longer. Maybe it was since it went, since it disappeared, it was almost like he wanted to go in and rescue it.
Where do you get the idea that he?
Well, because thrush music went. Mm-hmm. Went meaning gone. Mm-hmm. It was gone. And maybe he was liking the thrush music so much, and he was feeling so much in part of the thrush, part of the music, that when it was gone, he felt the sadness and kind of wanted to go in, and because it was almost like a call to come in. It's almost like, I really want to get involved, you know, and help the thrush. But that doesn't make any sense to the dark and the night.
Okay, other thoughts on that, on exactly how that works, the connection between the music that went and its being a call, or almost like a call?
Well, I sensed it drifting into the valley. Mm-hmm. You almost want to follow it drifting into the valley.
I see, so as it went out, its last fading tones,
yes.
He wants to somehow stay in touch with it, or at least follow it before it goes out entirely. So then you think that's also true?
Yeah, he's being drawn in the end.
Is he sorry that he didn't go in? Is he lamenting that? I don't think so. Could that, when it says through thrush music went, could that, I mean, to me that meant that the music continued, went on, sort of.
It went like this.
Reverberated. Far in the darkness, and you can still hear this echoing. Yeah.
As in thrush music went on and on and on.
Yeah, that's what that means.
Well, that's nice, because now we're, just like yesterday, remember we had, at the very crucial words in our poem, we found out that they could be read in ways that turned out the opposite from one another. Not just subtly different, but and at the very moment when we really want to know, we're at the center of this dramatic action, we now get this ambiguity. Far in the pillar dark, thrush music went. Almost like a call to come into the dark and lament. So if the thrush music went on and on, its going on and on was a kind of lamentation, or at least an invitation to lament. Or it was almost like that. At the very point that we want a kind of solid, unequivocal statement, we not only get this problem with how are we going to take when, but we also get the almost like. In other words, when we want a kind of crisp, straightforward, and here's what it was and here's what it meant, we get a backing off by the poet. Almost like a call to come in to the dark and lament. Now, of course, that ties back into the notion that what was at stake was a kind of grieving. that was at stake, rather than kind of dying.
You agree with him die.
Fine, that's true. They're not mutually exclusive, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then the sudden, but no, I was out for stars. I was out for stars.
I was out for stars.
I
don't
know.
Okay, so
the whole thing's written in I came, which is a past tense. The whole thing's written in past tense.
At least I said something different. I was out for stars, and he jumps back and he looks at himself. This is where I was. And once more, I will not come in. That's the way I think about it. He draws on the strength of yesterday, the decisions for stars of yesterday.
The was does not refer to that particular evening as he approached the edge of the woods, but approached, but applies to prior evenings?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the consistent decision or thought that he's had in his mind. This is the way he was.
But then he loses hanging with all
that. To me, that's not very consistent, though, because he seems to be quite surprised in the beginning that he heard the thrush music. So therefore, that would give him no reason at all to keep going back. And I mean, it wouldn't give him any reason to think that he was always out for stars. I mean, like, it's almost like thrush music was a choice or a dilemma. But he decided right then and there that he was out for the stars. Because it was the first time that he encountered the thrush.
To me, it means just now I was out for the stars, just on this evening, just in this event, just in this time. And this thrush song sort of deterred me a while, but I stuck to it.
Which is one more thing, is that he says he was out for stars. Stars happen at night when it is dark, so therefore it is no longer dusk. It's dark with ease now, true.
Well, that's certainly one way to read the notion about the reference to the stars, is that somehow during the course of this singing and whatnot, the division that we saw in the first stanza between if it was dusk outside, inside it was dark, no longer pertains.
Well, so if he was out looking for the star, he wouldn't go into the woods because you wouldn't see him in there.
Yeah.
He
could go along the edge of the woods.
Right. I wondered how the stars had anything to do with notoriety or fame, and he. By staying out of the woods, out of the darkness, there was more recognition. But if he went in where this call was in the woods, where you'd get lost in the woods, and there was no notoriety in that.
Okay. What do you make of the last line?
The last line?
Mm-hmm.
The third to the last.
Fine.
He says, I would not come in. Now, why didn't he say I would not go in? He said, I would not come in.
Why do you suppose that he said come in?
Sounds like he's still being called, or I think so.
Yeah.
Thinks there is something out there that's pulling.
Sure is.
In terms of the direct, straightforward, sort of, this time a simple-minded answer to the question, why he chooses come in, forgetting the title, what does that tie into in the preceding stanza?
It's almost like a call to come.
Right, it was almost like a call to come in. And so he's saying, I would not come in, I'm refusing this call to come in. But then look what he does. I would not come in. I meant not even have asked. And I hadn't been. This is a very surprising twist. I mean, and it's interesting to see what kind of emotional effect it has on people. And first of all, to try to involve you in a kind of decision, let me ask whether or not you read the last two lines to be something like this. You know how it is when you're asked, you make a statement like, Now look, I wouldn't even go to that party if she asked me. In other words, it's kind of like I want more than anything in the world to go to her party, but now I'm going to really make a statement, and that is, I'm not going even to fast. That's it, and there. In other words, the kind of protesting too much to show, which indicates how much you really want to go to the party. Okay, that's one way of possibly reading this. The other way is to suggest that really, upon reflection, the tentative almost like called to come in. It was quite literally almost like one, but wasn't really like one, and he simply is reaffirming the fact that whatever the thrush's invitation might have added up to, in the form of either continuing, went on, or dying out, it simply wasn't meant as a call for him to enter the woods.
In a sense, he's facing reality. Yes,
you mean he's pulling away from the whole poetic world of figurative language and just saying, look, this is just a thrush singing,
yeah,
that kind of thing?
No, then he's just facing the fact that he really wasn't invited all of a sudden.
Okay,
he
well then.
He admitted all the way along that he wasn't invited, and that he says it was almost like a call.
Well, he's inviting himself. If there's any inviting going on, I think he is tempted to make the step. But now he's saying, no, I haven't been invited. I'm not going here.
Yeah, well, he was out for stars. He went in himself to see what the stars could say to him.
I think it was more than just an invitation on himself to be invited in. I think it was drawing. I think the invitation was definitely good. You know, he definitely wanted to do it. Yet, I think the invitation was there, or was almost there. I think he might have kind of wished that it was really an invitation.
He was wishing it there.
But he was invited. I mean, you can't say he made it all up, because he did say it was almost like a call to come into the balcony then. Although I don't know why anybody would want to go into the balcony.
Depending on your mood, sometimes people get depressed, and this is the kind of thing that appeals to.
Particularly with the business about it being a kind of very grave, weighty, cathedral-like, pillar dark, where people would want to engage in a kind of mourning or a kind of dying, it's conceivable that there are times when that has a great power or a great pull, as you said earlier. At the beginning, you suggested that the speaker you thought felt a tremendous pull towards something. Does anybody else want to give us a sense of how they read the last "and I hadn't been" business?
Has anyone ever heard a thrush? Or what does it? I don't know what a thrush sounds like.
A robin is a thrush.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very melodious and very.
Is it sad or is it a more of a happy?
Cheerful. Very bright, cheerful song.
It would make sense for the thrush music to bear the last life of the David's dead. It just seems odd, doesn't it? The music that the thrush sings, going on, now that we've been reminded that thrush music is actually happy. And whether or not it is, it's in the world of this poem, it would seem to be a bearer of life. I mean, it is the last life of the day. Okay? Now, it would seem that the song of life here, and we've given this poor thrush a big job, because the poor thrush is the only thing left in the world of this poem, which bears life, the song of life, life's music, you say, the last light went out in the sun, or the die, all right? But now it's this very sound that's presumably almost like a call to lament, to come in and lament. So if we get back into the suicide thing, it's curious that that this life should be a kind of invitation to death. And the speaker says it's almost only, it's almost like a call to come in.
So it says it's the last song, and by going in, you won't have the song anymore, and you won't have the light, or the dusk, or you'll have the pillars, that cramped feeling of, egads, I really am alone, just this. And even the thrust song will be gone. Out here there's the stars.
That is light.
Light.
Light in the service.
I think I still go back to the thing that seems to make more sense. That the thrush music did not go on and on. It had stopped. And that it was the silence that was the call to come in. And he was lamenting that the thrush's song had stopped.
I see. The went means it disappeared. Faded out. And its fading out was almost like a call to come in.
Or it was no longer there. It was the silence that was more of a drawing. And you have sometimes, if a room is really quiet, you kind of want to go in and peek in and see what's in there.
But the thing is, you really don't want to go in at the same time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That's why I was almost
there. Right. It's really...
You're kind of nervous about doing it.
Yeah.
And the lament would be that he was sad. He was really sad that this thrush's song had stopped. That now the song was finished, the light was gone.
Mm-hmm. It's like the light was, although the light was gone, it was still embodied in the thrush's call. And when the thrush's call was gone, not only was the light gone, but the call was gone, everything was gone. It was black. He just lament. Everything was gone. Light and sound and happiness. Everything was gone.
Okay, I think that certainly does pose the dilemma in a strong way, but don't you all feel then deflated by the way the poem really ends? I mean, it seems to reach a kind of crescendo of resolution, but no, I was out for stars. Well, you think that means light or joy? Or a kind of tremendous idealism, the stars, as opposed to this dark and all of it's been loaded with. And if the poem would end there, but instead it goes, I would not come in. I meant not even if asked. And I am. Now, this is a typical thing of Frost, you see. I mean, just to say something parenthetically, he won't let us make of his poetry these kind of great decisions of the soul without funny little twists to it to kind of undercut his own or complicate his own or make ironic his own contraries that he poses for us. And so he gets very earthy at the end. It's kind of like, if insofar as come in can mean the kind of casual thing we say, oh, well, come in. He winds up talking in terms of tone, I meant not even fast, and I hadn't been. I mean, that's a very kind of matter of fact. You said realistic. It's almost as though this whole great metaphorical weight with pillar darks and thrushes singing the last sign of life and all of that, it's almost as though he steps back and goes, well, you know, I really wasn't asked to come into this woods. It was just a thrush singing, and I hadn't been asked, and there it is. As though the whole world of the poem kind of comes crashing down. By crashing down, I mean deflated from all of the great metaphorical weight we put on it. And the speaker won't let us put all that metaphorical weight on it. Instead, he was just out for a walk and he heard a thrush and there was no invitation at all.
Like he stumbled on someplace by accident and overheard something that he shouldn't have. And all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's almost like he says, oh, don't be silly, don't make too much of out of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, making sense is, yeah, well, it doesn't make the kind of...
It contradicts itself.
Right. I think it cuts against, those last three lines cut against the whole tone and the whole substance and the whole weight of the contraries and the dilemma and the predicament and the drama that we've been building up for 45 minutes. There's a kind of sudden deflation, undercutting or something like that. And working through exactly the nature of that tension of what happens to that speaker is to fully decide what the poem's about, which we won't have time to do in the next 3 minutes, but we can kind of leave it at that. Now, what we'll do on Monday is to really look at this poem in light as refracted in The Stopping by Woods, which is a psychodrama about a speaker in a situation with a choice which is very similar to this one, but in some ways very different. The kinds of things that account for the decision, the way the decision is weighed over and against one another, the growth or the deflation of initial impulses. All of those things are going to be ordered in this drama, in Stopping by Woods, but very differently, through different techniques and different diction and a different kind of progress. And it'll be interesting to compare those two speakers and their fates as those fates are unfolded in those two very different poems.